What is up, good people? My name is Jeremy Lewis. This is Life of the Brother Man podcast with my main man, Mr. Ahmed Chima. And today we're actually going to touch on a few topics that are close, they hit close to home for myself and hopefully you as well as an audience base, as far as understanding if you guys have taken this walk with us or have been a part of this journey. In the past, we've talked about knowing the right questions to ask. Let's evolve and take a little bit step further when we talk about how to answer those questions, so to speak, when we're the audience that's being asked a question, which a lot of people struggle with. So stick tight, hang with us, and we'll dive into it together.
Jeremy Lewis, what is up? What's
going on? Life is good. Talk to me. What's going on?
Hey, where are you at now? Where is the
brother? I'm still in Boston, holding true. I got another 5 days until I'm on my journey back to the great state of Georgia.
ATL.
Yes, Atlanta. Sir. Atlanta to be specific, but yeah, I'm counting down, man.
You excited? How are you feeling?
I am. I'm excited. And you know what? Somebody just asked me this, how do I feel about it? The reason why I'm excited is I get a chance to go back home as an adult. Because I feel like I spent my whole adulthood away from the state in which I was raised, right? Outside of high school, once I graduated, went to school and, I've been in North Carolina, Indiana, Ohio, Mass. So now it's kind of cool to kind of go back and kind of reconnect with my family as an adult for a longer period. But to answer your question, I'm thrilled, man.
I love how you consider yourself an adult. I don't know what gave you that impression, but
well, I stopped buying diapers last week, so I think that's a step in the right direction.
I'm just messing. All right, yeah, you ready to get right into it?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
So, for the audience that's following along, last week we talked about asking the right questions, and today I want to talk about answering the question, and I want to take us back, Jeremy. There was a moment that was really the inception of the Life of the Brother Man podcast for me, right? And that's where I was like, man, we need to start a podcast. And so what happened was we were just walking towards the area that we're working. And I don't know what sparked the conversation, but out of nowhere, you were like, you know what? It's really important. I don't remember how you worded it exactly, but I remember the conversation we had was, you need to answer the question, right? Whenever someone asks you a question, number one, your top priority should be to answer the question. A lot of people, they'll have 10 minutes of talking, the excuses, and they didn't answer the question. And the example that you gave me was like, all right, if someone comes and he's a minute late and you ask him the question, him or her the question, like, did you come late? Like, what time did you come in? And instead of answering like, hey, I got here at 9:05, they'll be like, this happened. I went to the store, blah, blah, blah. And then they wasted all this time and they didn't answer the question. So talk us through that. If you could give us that example again, and then explain, I just want you to touch on why it's so important and why it's so hard. Why is this a skill that we even have to talk about on here?
It's sad. You're right. It's like a lost art, just being able to interpret what answering a question means. And something so simple, right? And somebody can ask, hey, do you want to grab something to eat? And they'll say, well, I had a big breakfast or I had a late lunch. Just answer the question. It's a yes or no. Do you want to eat or do you not? People always feel like that's as opposed to answering something direct. And I think this is something that is a generation thing, honestly. I see it more so, or I think it's more prevalent in our generation than it was in the past. People are afraid to be direct and they feel like they have to kind of pacify or speak indirectly out of fear of how their answer is perceived. I don't want to hurt Ahmed's feeling by telling him that I don't want to eat with him, but at the same time, I'm not hungry. So let me try and dance around how I can say I'm not hungry.
Mm.
So I think it comes down to something so simple, right? When somebody asks you a question, even if you have to circle back to it, answer the question, you know, as opposed to going back and forth, you know, hey, I had a late lunch. I had a, I had brunch today. To answer your question, no, I do not want to grab lunch today. And I can explain why, but walk away knowing that you filled in that blank, right? It should be like a cloud hanging around our head, like with a blank box. And anytime anybody asks a question, just fill in that box before you come on. But yeah, man, it's so simple, but it's kind of lost in that generation, unfortunately.
Couple things I want to touch on here is, number one, I've seen you catch yourself a few times. And after seeing you do it, I think I started doing it too, where you start, someone will ask you a question and then you're dancing around it and you're like, oh shoot, what am I doing? To answer your question, yes or no, right? And so I think a lot of it is some of the culture where you're working or the people you're around might have. It might be prevalent there, and it's important to be intentional. And when you see that it's happening, even if it's you, make sure you catch yourself and answer the question, fill in that box, fill in that blank before you move on. The other thing is, you said it was a generational thing, and I want to kind of touch on that. Why do you think people, so you're saying people that are a little bit older, the last generation, are better at being direct versus our generation or the people that are coming in now, correct?
My experience, yes.
Why do you think that is?
I think we are a softer generation. I think we're softer in age. And I say that we're softer because we're afraid of being direct because we sugarcoat things and pacify our message because of how people may perceive us. And I think our generations prior to us didn't have that sugarcoating ability.
I'm trying to think, and I think part of it comes from, if you look at social media, a lot of it is like you're in this echo chamber of generally people that view things the way you view things, and the algorithms are built in a way where your views are kind of just recirculated to you, right? And so when you come across people that have different views or might look at you for saying something that's different from what they believe, you might get a little bit of pushback. It's a little bit tough to do. And the other thing is, we're so used to just having these conversations online that we don't even know how to have these conversations in person, right? It's really easy to be a keyboard warrior and, you know, talk a lot of trash online. And then you come in person, it's like the guy doesn't know, you know, he's like, you know, he can't speak up for himself. You know what I mean? So a couple thoughts I had there. I want to get into what you see, not just answering the question, but sometimes you see people will resort to making excuses and not being 100% honest because they feel like, I don't know what it is, but when they get asked a question, they will resort to, you know, making excuses, not taking ownership for, let's say we show up 5 minutes late to work. Correct. Instead of just saying, yeah, I was 5 minutes late, my bad. People, a lot of times you'll see is they'll make up excuses. They'll say X, Y, Z. And so I want to talk a little bit about what drives that. And then how do we create a culture where our team feels comfortable owning up to their mistakes and not having to lie, essentially?
So let's talk about a lie, you know, let's kind of work backwards. You know, anytime we throw that three letter word, L-I-E, you know, in the air, like what's the basis of it, right?
You lie like a rug.
You lie like a rug, right? So in my head, and this is, you know, this is just my way of thinking. I'm always curious to know, like, what drives or propels a person to lie? You know, why does somebody feel like they're in a position where they need to lie? And initially, I'm thinking two different reasons. One is people lie because they're afraid, and this falls for the majority of my thoughts. People are afraid of what the truth is in regards to how they're perceived. So the truth is what it is. Now, how we communicate that is one thing. Now, one side of it, people lie out of fear for in accordance with trying to attempt to protect someone's feelings emotionally, right? And that kind of ties back into what you talked, you know, what you mentioned earlier in regards to like the social media age. You know, we try to protect those around us, and as opposed to being straight shooters and honest in regards to the feedback that we're giving others, the answers that we're giving others, we sugarcoat things so it's more acceptable in the sense of our communication. And how we can get away from that is understanding the value that truth brings. Mm. If we feel like we're in a position that we constantly have to lie, we constantly have to sugarcoat things because that's our truth, then maybe we should challenge ourselves to have a better truth and live your life where your message isn't something the truth isn't something you're afraid of revealing. If you're constantly in a position where you feel like you have to lie to sugarcoat a message, then it's a self-reflection of us as individuals, right? I'm thinking, how am I living my life to a point where I need to sugarcoat everything that I speak? So it's a personal challenge of anything. It's an opportunity for growth when you talk about, you know, once you recognize that.
Have you seen the Kevin Hart deer brisket?
I have. Yeah, for sure.
That's what it reminds me of. You want to, for the audience that's listening, you want to fill them in on what that was about?
Yeah. So Kevin Hart, you know, renowned comedian, he broke down the concept of lies, you know, at his most basic form. You know, he said that he's just an instinctive liar. It's just who he is. He enjoys lying. So he kind of talked it up in regards to, he got so caught up in telling lies that he almost couldn't really, variate to the actual truth anymore. So it came to a point where he was explaining why he was late for work, and kind of similar to what you mentioned earlier. And as opposed to, traffic, as opposed to I woke up late, my alarm, whatever the excuse is, he comes up with this grand story, which was, you know, illustrated very well, by the way. You know, it incorporated a deer bro, which we're still looking for. National Geographic is still in the book for this animal because he sold it so well. But he threw in so many different wild, you know, it's these bizarre stories that kind of, you know, illustrate what we're alluding to. You know, as far as people are afraid to be direct, so they feel like they're ultimately sugarcoating and fabricating these stories. So it's perceived as, hey, that makes sense. I understand why Jeremy was late now. As opposed to being like, hey, I left 5 minutes late. I left 5 minutes later than I normally would, so to speak. The truth is something that, as tough as it may be at times, it's one of those things where you can never fault somebody for telling the truth. You can forgive somebody for telling the truth if their actions, you know, warrants it, however, but the truth is something that we should, our generation today should learn to accept. And I think that's a step in the right direction for how we're perceived when we're honest.
So if I'm getting what you're saying, if I'm picking up what you're putting down, is it starts with understanding the truth and then at the personal level, not lying to yourself, right? So understanding that you need to trust yourself enough to not tell yourself lies. And then from there, that will kind of extend to your other interactions. But really, it has to come back to you and you taking ownership of your own actions, even if no one else sees it, right? Even if no one else knows the truth, you can fool the world. You can't fool yourself, right? And so be conscious of what the truth is and make sure that even if you're working on the external piece, make sure the internal piece, you have enough trust with yourself to look yourself in the eyes and say, hey, this is what happened, right? And so I think that's a valuable lesson, Jeremy. Thank you for that. What I want to do next is something that is like, I think on the Life of the Brother Man podcast is probably my favorite thing to do. And it's, let's do a role play, right? Let's say you have someone that reports to you who is like this, right? Let's say exactly like Kevin Hart will make these grand stories, make these lies for like something simple, right? How do you coach this person into actually telling the truth and taking ownership for the truth?
Once the message is received, it's very direct at this point, Matt. What could we have done differently to avoid this situation? Now, in this present form, what could we have done differently to avoid this situation? Okay.
I mean, the dear bro, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I was just doing what I thought was best.
Well, our definition of best may vary. So that's something that, you know, let's take a look at it and put yourself in my shoes, right? You know, once I'm being receptive to your story, I'm not knocking your story by all means. But at the same time, it's an opportunity to grow, right? So let's learn from it. A story is something that, or in a situation like this, is something that we can either learn from, build upon, take steps together to avoid future occurrences, or we can have the same issue tomorrow and the day after, which may potentially be your last day with the company. But the choice we have, the beauty of it is that we have an opportunity today is to shed light on what we could have done differently and avoid replicating this day over day. So it's not a case or an instance of what story should I outdo for my next time I'm going to be late. Just don't be late, do better.
Mm. So what you're saying is what I'm getting from how you handled this and what I want to emphasize here is that the story we have pretty good BS meters. All right. We know that the story was not real. And what you did was flip it back on the person and said, hey, how can we avoid this? Right? Like, okay, let's forget your version of the truth, but let's see, whatever the story may be, how do we take actions? How do we take, let's come up with a plan
and
to
Ahmed,
avoid this in the future.
The reason why, and not to cut you off, but the reason why I encourage that approach, if you come trying to downplay or muddy the waters in this story, it creates a forced defense mechanism from your audience. Mm. And your audience in this case is the associate who's giving you this, you know, bizarre story. The story is what it is. It's already in the air. However, if you go with the approach, I should poke holes in his story, then he or she potentially has their guard up. So just work through avoiding the need for another story. So
you still put the ownership back on them without even looking at the story, because really with the purpose, what we're trying to get them to do is come to work on time, right? And
for
so
sure.
even though their story was not correct, I think in the long run, what we'll get to is like, look, you can have whatever story, you need to come to work on time.
And what do we learn from it? You know, what do we learn from it?
Yep, that's a really good point. Love the way you handle that. Appreciate it. What I want to touch on next is Warren Buffett had this quote that I came across, and this is where I want to steer the direction for the remainder of this podcast. And he said, when he's hiring, he looks for three things. Number one, brains. Number two, energy. And number three, integrity. And he said, if they don't have the third, watch out, because the first two will kill you. Right. And so coming back into the concept of the truth, having integrity, right? This is something where, I mean, me and you have both been in a culture where integrity may not have been at the forefront, right? And so what does that do when you don't have this focus on integrity? What does that do to your team's culture? And how do you avoid falling into the trap of allowing people with brains and energy, and they don't have the integrity, allowing them to kind of run the show?
Consistency and leading by example. You know, when we talk about telling the truth and leading by example and being the example for our audience or our associate or team base, everybody knows this quote, right? This quote is, you know, it's not what you do when others are watching, it's what you do when you're alone, right? You know, when we talk about integrity. And we kind of learned that early on, but let's revisit that as an adult, because when we're acting with an audience base, we potentially have the tendency to try and appease others, right? Try and fulfill others' perception of us, as opposed to when we're acting alone, every decision that we make is intuitive. It's a decision that is our personal instincts, and we're doing it because it's the right thing. But you know, potentially, you know, we often have the opportunity to stray from leading in the dark. And by leading in the dark solely means that we're walking the walk when others are not watching. But that becomes a part of our personal culture, our personal brand. So when we talk about leading in the workplace and allowing others who may not have the opportunity, so to speak, to lead with integrity, was that your original question? Those who cannot lead with integrity?
Yeah, it's two questions I had. I probably should have phrased them better, but the first one was, how do we be people that lead with integrity? And the second is like, how do we make sure that if we're in a culture where integrity is not valued, you know, how do we, I don't think I actually mentioned this question, but the next question I have for you is, let's say we're in a culture where integrity is not valued. Like, how do we as leaders make sure that it doesn't affect our team, right? So the people above us may not value integrity, but how do we make sure that that doesn't trickle down? Because you see a lot of the character traits at the top trickle down to all the way down to the lowest level, right? So if a company doesn't value certain values at the top, that will end up flowing all the way down to the bottom. So how do we make sure that no matter what's happening above us, we value integrity?
This is at an individual basis. And this is something that I always circle back to when we talk about the whys, right? Why do we do what we do? And when we connect the dots to integrity, let's say I have an individual who's has a strong home life, who, you know, goes to work, does things the right way. What's motivating him or her? You know, it takes time ultimately because it requires us to have to, you know, get to know our team, and that's part of our relationship building. But when we talk about integrity, connecting the dots and figuring out what's important to somebody and why is it important to them. And once something is important to somebody, that's their source of truth. Their source of truth is what motivates them. It's what ticks them. It's their ultimate why. So it's at an individual level. I don't think, you know, you can put a blanket on it and explain the importance of integrity, but it's not going to connect. It's not going to hit or resonate for everybody the same way, just because their perception of the truth varies, rightfully so. But it comes down to understanding what makes your team tick and really dive in at the individual level as far as the motivating and why factors and finding their truth, because everyone's truth is different. But truth ultimately at an individual level is going to help propel integrity in your workforce.
So Jeremy, next thing, I know I'm kind of all over the place today. I had a couple quotes from this book that I'm reading, Ride of a Lifetime by Bob Iger. I wanted to run them by you. I don't know if they completely fit into our theme today, but I thought it's worth mentioning. It's good leadership principles. And at the very worst case, we got them in here. And the audience will benefit, I feel like.
Let's talk about it.
The first one is, he says, true authority and true leadership come from knowing who you are and not pretending to be anything else. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that hits close to home. I think it's right on point. You know, when we talk about trying to be somebody else because you're not comfortable enough in your own skin to be who you are. And that essentially leads you to potentially falsifying. Yeah, exactly. Kind of falsifying your information, falsifying or afraid to speak the truth. And which kind of brings up another subject. And I hate to kind of open up another book or another can, but if you're in a situation where you're around people and you're forced to not be your, or if you don't feel comfortable being yourself, then you should probably change your circle, which is tough for a lot of people to really acknowledge that, wow. Right? You know, you should potentially change your circle if you're not who you are, because not only are you doing a disservice, but you're also in a situation where you can't sustain being fake. You can't sustain not being genuine to yourself and hold yourself accountable for being who you are, which sounds, it sounds silly to even say that, right? But holding true and being genuine to yourself should attract the people that are in a position to appreciate your blessings that you're putting out there.
Wow, that's powerful. So how do you go about changing your circle? Because it could be you're, you know, these people for years and years and years, you're, these are your homeboys. You know what I mean? Yeah. How do you, and it's sad, but I feel like it happens way more than I would like, or anyone would like, is that you don't feel comfortable around the people that are closest to you.
So Ahmed, I'm going to slightly, I beg to differ. And I'll tell you why, because your inner circle are those that have seen the growth around you, have seen you grow. They've seen you, you know, whether you met in college, whether you met, you know, fresh out of college, but they've seen you at different phases of your life, potentially. Those that go back and have history, who you have history with, are those that have seen how you've overcome, you know, barriers in life, how you've overcome obstacles in life. They've celebrated victories with you. They should have, you know, been with you with the tough times as well. But those are people where you should be able to be who you are without having to second guess if I'm good enough. Because anytime we're in a situation where we're telling a lie, ultimately we're looking at ourselves in the mirror and saying, my truth isn't good enough.
Yeah. So I agree with you on that. I think your true day ones, your inner circle, that is definitely the case. I will say in my personal case, I know I can think of two or three people. I'm not going to mention any names, of course, but like these guys, yeah, these guys were, I was super tight with them in high school. And then in college, we were pretty tight. And then a couple things happened where I was just like, this guy is not who I want to be around.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it is nothing wrong with that. Everybody's not for everybody. People, everybody has their own path. Everybody has their own journey. Some people cross paths and it's a beautiful thing. But I think as an adult, to make a truly mature decision in life, we have to understand first and foremost that this is not the right walk for me. And people are afraid of accepting that, you know, as far as, you know, everybody's journey is different and everybody is not for everybody.
That's powerful, man. I want to just echo that sentiment again, and then I'll get into the last thing for today. And that is, as Jeremy just mentioned, I think it's really important to be selective with who you spend your time with, because those are the people that shape who you are, right? Like Jeremy, like we work together and we spent a lot of time together just because we're at work, maybe 48 hours, and we were in the same area. And I picked up a lot from you, right? And so if you're not intentional with those people that you are spending your time with, then you're going to pick up things that they, characteristic traits that they have that you may not even realize that you're picking up on. I'll tell you one story. And we had a boss, a mutual manager. And I personally despised the way he led his team, the way he interacted with us, the way he was a micromanager. And I hated it. I hated it. And some of the phrases, I noticed myself using the same phrases when I'm dealing with my team that he was using with me. And I was like, man, what is happening to me? I'm like, who am I becoming? Right. And so just to echo your sentiment, I really wanted to just, you already said it, I want to say it again, just because it's so important, is be intentional with who you're spending your time with, because these people will shape who you are. And the characteristics and traits that they have will rub off on you, whether you like it or not, right? So it's better to be intentional and actually pick up traits that you want to pick up with, rather than falling into some characteristics and traits that you don't want. You find out only when it's too late, right? Like
unfortunately, yeah.
So Last thing I wanted to touch on also from this book, I know I'm mentioning this book a lot, but you know, it's for all leaders, I think it's a really good book. So Bob Iger did a tremendous job with Disney under his helm. And so I think anyone in the leadership space, he's a really good storyteller, and he has a lot of years leading at the highest level. So it's a really good book. So one thing he mentions is that when he was a lower level executive at ABC, there was a world record mile that was being filmed. I think the name of the person that was running was Sebastian Coe. And so ABC, he was in charge of ABC's sports programming at the time. And so ABC unfortunately wasn't able to pick up the rights for that event. And he was hoping, like unrealistically, he says, he's like, I was hoping unrealistically that maybe they wouldn't notice and I wouldn't, like no one would bring it up. He said, Monday we have this meeting with all the senior executives and the head of the ABC sports and everything. And the first matter of order is, how the heck did we miss this? Right? And they're just all, and the person that was at the head is just looking around like, whose fault is this? Like, he's really just trying to figure out like who to blast, right? And no one's owning up to it. And then finally, he said the way the room was set up is that you have the senior executives like at the table, and then you have the lower level executives like he was, like around the room in like chairs, right? He's like, you know, I just raised my hand and I said, it was my fault. And from there, they just moved on, went to the next subject. And people after came to him and they were like, I cannot believe you did that. He's like, what are you talking about? I just, you know, owned up to my mistake. He's like, no one, they said, the people that came to him said, no one ever does that. And he said the head of the department who was actually calling, he was actually trying to find out whose fault it was. He said he viewed me with a higher regard after that.
Yeah.
And the quote he had was, in your work, in your life, you'll be more respected and trusted by the people around you if you honestly own up to your mistakes. I think this fits right with the theme that we're going for, is that number one, answer the question. And number two, have integrity. Own up to your mistakes. Own up to when you have things happen. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to make mistakes. People are going to mess up, right? We have to make sure that we as leaders own up to our mistakes. We learn from them. And then moving forward, we have a plan not to make those same mistakes again. Right?
And you hit that, Jeremy. I'm glad you brought it home the way you did. I was waiting for it. I was like, bring it home, man. Bring it home. And you did. And most of, and I'll tell you what I mean by that, because it's important, you know, naturally when we tell a story or an excuse, you know, is what I like to call it, you know, naturally when we take ownership or are not inclined to take ownership, we always explain what happened. Well, that's great. But the true battle is, how are you going to avoid replicating that, or how are you going to avoid making these mistakes? Because if you don't figure out a plan to act upon to avoid making the mistakes, then you haven't grown from your mistake. You haven't taken anything away from it. So in order for you to grow and build upon your mistakes, which, like you mentioned, are going to happen, we're human, right? But we should be able to walk away with a plan or internally developed from it, that we can walk away with a small grain and say, hey, this is what we're wrong. This is how I'm going to avoid this going forward. That's maturity. That's growth.
And this is something we talk about at work, right? Good intentions don't work.
It sounds good. It sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. So just so the audience is aware, there's this famous, like Jeff Bezos, I think, actually, or it might have been someone else at the company, but they have this saying where anytime a product launch fails or something messes up, teams have this tradition that they'll get everyone together in the same room and they're like, yeah, we messed up. We're going to do better next time. And everyone has good intentions. And they said the problem with that is we're assuming that they had bad intentions at the beginning. Like, we have to understand that no one's here trying to fail, right? Everyone had good intentions to begin with. That wasn't the problem. The problem was we didn't have a mechanism to make sure that we execute on what we're trying to execute on. And so the important piece here is that understand where you messed up and then put together some structure in place where you can't. Like, it's not that you don't want to mess up again. No one wants to mess up again, but set it up in a way that you can't mess up again, right? And so I want to break it down for, like, I want to do like a practical example of this, but I'm kind of blanking on anything right now. I don't know if you got one in your head of putting a mechanism in place.
Yeah, it could be something simple. It could be something simple. Amit, I'm the type, and everybody's different. I'm the type that I like writing. I'm old school when it comes down to like writing things down. I need to have it, you know, tangible in a paper form. I'm looking at my laptop now and I have sticky tabs like kind of around it. It looks like I'm building a fence around my laptop. But the purpose of that is I can type it into my notepad, which is great. But the value of it for me, or the mechanism that I put in place to ensure that I don't forget things, is to physically write it down. By physically writing it down, I have better retention and I have visibility to it as I'm doing my daily task. So that's something that I've incorporated in my personal life as well as my work life, is the mechanism is writing things down, have a tangible paper, you know, ink hit the pad, kind of old school, but it works for myself and I still hold true to it.
Love it. Thank you for that. So some key takeaways that I had from today is that, number one, again, we've said this a million times, but answer the question. Even if you have to circle back to it, come back to it, fill in the blank, answer the question before you move on. And number two is lead with integrity. Understand the truth and don't lie to yourself, right? Like, make sure that you are leading, be who you are, be true to who you are, and be true to your truth, essentially. Jeremy, what you got for the key takeaways?
I'm always big on challenges, Amit, and I challenge the audience to really have an understanding and self-reflection of their own BS meter or their own lie meter. You know, as you go throughout the course of your day, take a genuine approach as far as how many lies I'm in a situation or how often I'm fibbing the truth and what's the basis of why I'm fibbing the truth. You know, who's my audience and why do I feel uncomfortable being genuine to myself? So I challenge everybody to just be mindful of the truth that they put out there versus the reality of, and the truth they put out there, of course, could be a lie, but that's their truth, so to speak. So I just challenge everybody to be honest with themselves.
I love it. Learned a lot this session. Appreciate you taking the time as always,
Jeremy. Always, man. Always.
To the audience, all two of you guys that are listening, we really appreciate you guys. Let us know what you think. Give us feedback. Any topic ideas that you have, anything you're struggling with. In the coming months, Jeremy and I are both moving into some new roles. So I'm really excited for what we will be doing is working with, I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I'll be working with a smaller team, right? And I'll be going and really focusing on developing a few people. Whereas in the past, it was like you had a lot of people, but your role wasn't to really develop them as much. You know what I mean? Now it's like, okay, you need to take these people that are leaders at one level and take them to the next level. So I'm really excited about some of the conversations we're going to have around that and building your team culture, that kind of thing. So
it's going to be a good walk.
Yeah, we will have a lot of fun these upcoming months. So stick around. We will see you guys next time.
Good deal. Thank you, Gal, as always. We'll be back.